I'm Richard van den Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
And I'm Andrew Fraser.
This is Talk Central, episode 187 for the weekend starting 18 August 2017.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, real technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, ICASA attempts to deal with expiring data. Is it going about it correctly?
Also this week, should the mobile operators be forced to open their networks to data resellers?
Plus, what's happening to digital migration? MVNO Lyca Mobile to launch in South Africa, and what's going on at Dimension Data?
It's Friday, and that means it's time for another podcast.
Well, welcome to the show. How's it, guys?
How's it, Duncan?
How's it, Richard? Andrew, thanks for joining us again on the show. It's great to have you back.
Yeah, hi, Duncan.
So before we get on to the news, and there's lots to talk about, as always, let's do our quiz. Richard, do you want to do the first question?
Yeah, certainly. The first question in this week's quiz. Which major PC manufacturer this week reported an unexpectedly poor set of financial results?
The ICASA CEO this week resigned after being suspended a few weeks ago. Who is he?
Third question, which industry body this week called on mobile operators to open their networks to data resellers?
The fourth question, HMD Global this week unveiled the first flagship Nokia Android phone. What is it called? And for a bonus point, what processor powers it?
And fifth question, which company this week announced plans to make the blockchain available from space using satellites?
Mm-hmm. We'll get to the answers to the quiz, as always, at the end of the show. But let's get into our news, and there is plenty to talk about. But before we even talk about the news, Andrew, we had you on, when was it, about 3 or 4 weeks ago now?
About a month back, yeah.
Yeah, sure. And you gave us some fascinating insight into the world of Gupta sock puppets and how they're using Twitter and other social media to try and stir or direct their agenda. I believe that there's been some update in your investigations in that regard.
Yeah, I'm still monitoring them and seeing what's out there, and they literally are literally thousands of these kind of fake accounts. But we've seen a little bit of a turn. During the no confidence vote, there was a huge amount of support for the kind of Zuma faction. And these kind of sock puppets went on about, you know, how important it was for the ANC not to vote against Zuma. And straight after that, we saw a lot of the messaging, particularly around that story, was around how the ANC MPs that voted against Zuma were traitors, and MPP and various other words were used for them. And now, over the last couple of days, there's quite a strong message against Cyril Ramaphosa. So it seems that the kind of factional fight is playing out within these sock puppets, where they're just putting out this kind of anti-Ramaphosa messaging, very pro, as SABC calls her, mini Zuma.
Was that real? I saw that screenshot.
Yeah, it was real. I think it was just a typo. But it's slightly apt. So they're still out there. There's still a lot of them. There does seem to be kind of two groups of some of it based locally and some of it based out of India, and you can see the kind of difference in the type of thing that is out there, but it's not going away. It kind of revolves, I think, as accounts get reported and Twitter suspends them, they just move on to different accounts.
It's going to be interesting to see as we head up to the ANC conference in December,
yeah,
how the modus operandi changes.
And also, I mean, it's like a big fake news thing. So, I mean, the stuff I see on Twitter and the sock puppets is really about folk trying to get people to go onto these kind of fake sites. And there's more of them. You know, there's new versions of those things coming out all the time, kind of WordPress sites that are hosted behind kind of secret or privacy protected websites,
yeah.
So you can't find out who owns them or where they come from. So I think it's something that's happening throughout the world. It's just quite fascinating that it's something that we can study locally,
yes,
and it's quite focused on the local market.
Yeah, I suppose it's worth keeping an eye on those websites just to see what they're thinking.
Yeah, and also if you try and read them, I mean, some of it is
that's
shocking. It's not readable.
You know? Bad attempt at fake news.
The English is terrible. You know, the grammar is awful. I mean, and that's assuming that it actually had any meaning in the first place.
Yes. But if you're keen to find out more about Andrew's investigations into the Gupta sock puppets, do go have a look at that, listen to that episode. It was about a month ago. Well worth listening to. But let's get on to our news that we didn't record last week because I was out in the Limpopo somewhere running over a mountain.
So how did that work out for you?
I couldn't walk for a few days, but I'm doing all right now, thanks. But we're back. So we've got 2 weeks of news to catch up on. And something that broke actually just before I went away was the draft regulations published by ICASA, the communications regulator. These are apparently the first in a series of planned interventions by the regulator to try and deal with perceived high data pricing in South Africa, particularly amongst the mobile operators. Now, they've published these draft regulations. I think they've given interested parties until later this month, if I remember correctly, to I think the 26th or the 28th of August. To respond, and presumably they'll go through the usual process of hearings and all that sort of thing. But they haven't exactly been universally welcomed. I think the sort of general initial response, certainly on Twitter, was, well done, ICASA. You know, these guys are getting away with murder. How can they even think about expiring our data? So the proposals range from expiring data within 10 days, a minimum of 10 days, for small amounts of data, I think 10 to 50 megs, and then going up quite dramatically. So if you buy over 20 gigs mobile data bundle, your data won't expire for 2 years.
Nice.
At the moment, I think the sort of general industry approach is to expire after a month or 30 days.
Yeah, I think it's usually 30 days or 30 plus 30 kind of thing. So you buy it for 1 month and it'll expire at the end of the following month.
Yeah.
Which is still not really ideal, let's be honest. I mean, if you're not using it up, it's not.
I mean, the networks have always argued that they need to expire their data in order to plan their network, and that, you know, not knowing how much data people are going to use in the future makes it more difficult for them to plan. But I think it's nonsense. I think, really? You know, okay. there's so many customers that it's fairly easy for them to extrapolate what the kind of mean usage is going to be over time. So I don't really. I mean, the real reason they want to expire the data is because they want to sell more.
It's billing, yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of on ICASA's side with this. I think that the expiry of data is, it's not ideal for the consumer. So I think that they really should consider it. I mean, 2 years is a long time.
Mm.
I think there may be some wiggle room in terms of the length, but I think it's right.
Some people have said that why should data expire at all? You're buying a product. If I go and buy a TV, exactly. It's mine to keep forever.
That's how I feel about it.
You know, the operators argue that that it has to expire. One example I heard was this is a bit like timeshare. If you don't use it during the allotted period, then you lose it. I don't know if that's a fair analogy to make.
I've had some, I mean, Vodacom had some great analogies about something about a river flowing and water flowing, and I mean, it was just nonsense, to be honest with you. It took me 25 minutes to read this explanation. At the end of it, I was no wiser in terms of why data had to expire. I think it's a business decision. They expire data because they need to plan their revenues. That's the reason.
Yes. Yes,
but at the end of the day, it's a product, right? It's something that's more important than many other utilities, I think. In some cases, you're having it expire. It's not any good for the people, I think. Or
the networks don't like you to say utility in the same sentence as their names. They don't want to be seen as utilities,
but that's what they are.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just looking at the data bundles here and the expiry periods that ICASA is proposing. So. One criticism that ICASA has received over this is that it is actually anti-poor in that it's the poor who buy the small data bundle. So 1 to 50 megabytes under ICASA's proposed regulations would expire, or the operators would be allowed to expire it after 10 days. Now, it's the poor who are buying those small data bundles because they can't afford to buy the 10 gig, the 20 gig data bundles. So is it not actually penalizing the poor who at the moment might be buying a 20 meg data bundle that expires after 30 days? Now, ICASA is giving permission to the operators to say, or almost drawing a line in the sand saying this is what you should be expiring this after 10 days.
But I mean, currently the networks are expiring that stuff after 24 hours.
In some instances, you know, they are doing that, yeah.
You know, the 2 rand data bundle, which expires, well, as soon as you connect, but. I think it's just a practicality thing. I mean, 5 or 10 megabytes, I mean, there's no way it's going to last 2 years. So it's true. A bit of a moot point.
Yeah, I suppose. It's an interesting one. Why have differentiated expiry periods? Why not just say you may not expire data for 90 days or something like that?
Yeah, I'm sure there's a universal, I think 3 months or maybe 6 months is ideal for that type of thing. Mm-hmm.
30 days does seem a bit stingy.
It does,
yeah.
It does.
It's one thing that ICASA is making this noise. I mean, ICASA makes noise and it will play out over the next 5 or 6 years. It goes to court. But, I mean, today there was an announcement that the Competitions Commission is now investigating the same issue. And that's significant because they are...
They have teeth.
And they use those teeth as well. Mm. And they also tend to be faster. So it'll take a year to do the initial investigation.
Mm-hmm.
But usually what happens is when they hand over their recommendations to the tribunal, it is implemented usually within kind of 60 days of that.
Yes, and they actually do proper research. I mean, they've got economists, they've got teams of experts who, and if they don't have them, they bring them in. If I was one of the operators, I'd be much more concerned about the Competition Commission investigation than what ICASA has got proposed.
I think the networks have done it to ICASA before, is wherever a recommendation comes out and drafts are put out that they don't agree with, they just threaten legal action.
Yeah.
And they've got so much more in terms of resources to push that out as far as possible that ICASA just can't keep up.
Yeah, and unfortunately ICASA makes mistakes as well. We saw that in the mobile call termination regulations, which ended up in court. The ICASA actually lost that court case that was brought by MTN and Vodacom, but bizarrely the judge said, I'm going to implement these regulations anyway because they're in the public interest.
Yeah, for public interest. But just, I've got one last question on this topic. I'm not a prepaid voice user, but does voice expire? Surely not. Surely if you buy 150 rand worth of voice minutes.
Well, if you don't use it, your SIM card gets cut off.
Yeah, but I mean, it doesn't expire after 30 days. So. No, I know with Afrios, when I bought, there was evergreen data. So any top-ups I did seemed to be evergreen, which meant it didn't expire. Yeah.
As long as you create what's called a revenue-generating event for the network, they won't cut off your SIM card. I don't know if there's actually a certain time frame in which you have to use the voice minutes.
I don't think voice, at least not through Afrios, I don't think it expires if you top up. I think your monthly could expire, so your monthly allocated minutes, those kind of things expire.
I have a prepaid SIM in a phone that I use for running with, and I may have a note in my diary to make one phone call every 90 days so that the SIM card doesn't get cut off. And the balance in there never goes down, so I don't think they do terminate.
But it's not an empty SIM because then your balance probably would have gone down.
Right? Yes, indeed. So the Competition Commission investigation is an interesting one. They say they're going to wrap this up by August 2018, which is a year from now. That's pretty soon in terms of regulatory investigations and that sort of thing. But there's an interesting precedent here as well, given the consent agreement that the Competition Commission reached with Telkom a few years ago, which was quite far-ranging. It led to the creation of OpenServe. It led to a much more clearly delineated... clearer delineation between the wholesale
and retail
arms of Telkom, and I think it's been good for Telkom actually. And I think Telkom's management team under Sipho Maseko realized that actually this consent agreement, if we embrace it, is actually going to be good for our business. But they went after Telkom in a big way, the commission, and certainly the phrasing that they're using here in the press release that they issued about the planned investigation into the data services market is phrased using language that's very similar to the language that was used in that consent agreement. They went for a similar market study. They looked at the structure of the market, you know, who has too much power, all this sort of thing. And I wouldn't be surprised if they're going to side with the Internet Service Providers Association, which is agitating very heavily.
Yeah.
For the mobile operators to open up their networks in the same way that OpenServe and Vumatel and others have in the fixed line market. The argument the ISPs make is that the market will be much more competitive, that we have much more product innovation if the whole range of internet service providers currently servicing the fixed line market were able to bring that to bear in mobile.
Mm. I mean, we've seen that to a small extent with Afrihost working with MTN. Going out there with data packages and voice packages that are much, much better than MTNs.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the service offering and their back end, I mean, all of those things, it aids with that kind of development, I think.
MTN, of course, backed out of that.
Yeah. it was starting to make them look a bit bad, I think.
They took a huge bath on that. I think in last year's annual report, they disclosed the goodwill they had to pay on that acquisition, and it was some very large 9-digit number, I think.
Mm. But that's good, you know. That shows that a kind of a virtual network for data is feasible. It can work. Yeah. You know, Avery has proved it. So I don't see why the other guys aren't prepared to consider it.
What's the difference, though, between what the ISPA is asking for here and the MVNO model?
I think...
Or is it the same thing?
I think it's a little bit different in terms of the MVNO is really about the voice portion of it. You know, so the working with the GSM business, and that requires quite a lot of equipment and work from the network itself.
Mm-hmm.
But when we start just talking about being an ISP data, it's much, much simpler. Basically, you're just connecting in. So I really think that it makes sense for the networks to actually embrace it. I think it's an opportunity to do more business, allow for more infrastructure development.
Why are they so allergic to the idea?
Because they were around in the 90s and they think that they should be given money for nothing.
Yeah, maybe losing control of their network and their infrastructure because they're not going to be the guys at the forefront trying to innovate this thing.
In many ways, the mobile operators now are in the same position that Telkom was in the 1990s and early 2000s, where they were these big beasts, vertically integrated, wanting to do or doing everything, not wanting to open up to competitors. Telkom, I think, has changed out of necessity.
But too late as well. I mean, look at all these things that they've opened up now. But
yeah, I think it comes down to exactly what I said earlier. It's like the networks don't want to admit that they're utilities. that's fundamentally the issue, that they don't want to admit that. They want to be seen as value-adding entities. And the fact is that the world has moved. Mm. They're now utilities. They're like lights, water, electricity. Data is a utility. Mm. And I think the networks that kind of go with that idea are the ones that are going to be successful. And we've seen that. I think Telkom has grasped that. Mm. They've realized that it is a utility. And stop, you know, don't try and differentiate on that. Be the best utility. That's the way to work on it.
They are the first operator that's really gone for a data-led approach. In fact, their latest plans on fixed line shows us that they actually do get it, right? Because they're giving away voice now. Voice is free on Telkom. Free in inverted commas.
Yeah.
You can make unlimited phone calls.
I think they've got the infrastructure and that's a card that they can play much easier than the network operators can.
Yeah, but that's still protecting a massive legacy voice business. Mm. Telkom's voice business is
dead.
Mm.
That's the point. Yeah. They know they can give it away because nobody's using it.
Yes. So. No, when last did you pick up a Telkom phone and made a call? When last did you use a public telephone to make a call? When last did you see a public telephone?
Oh, there's still pay phones around, yes. I haven't seen one in a long time.
but as I say, I mean, that is just grasping the concept that you are a utility and working with that. Look, I mean, Telkom is, on the mobile space, is a distant number four. So they can afford to do it. I mean, what's going to happen? They can't fall further down the ranking. So I think it's worked for them. It's definitely got them new customers. It's changed people's opinion of Telkom, I think, to an extent. But I think Vodacom and MTN, and probably MTN more than Vodacom, really needs to grasp that concept. I think Vodacom has still got a stronger kind of brand equity where they can maybe argue that they are the best at everything.
Mm.
I don't think MTN can do that.
Mm. Yeah. And Cell C, where's Cell C in all of this?
Fast follower.
Yeah.
It's okay to be a fast follower. You know, you don't have to be the best. You don't have to be the first. You can just be there and thereabouts.
Yeah.
And I think that's their aim.
Yes. And of course, Cell C is now... owned 45% by Blue Label. That deal went through, I think, 10 days ago. Their debt reduced from 23 billion to 5.6 billion.
So not everything about the Middle East is bad. they took a bath on Celsi.
They did. A lot of money spent. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch Celsi over the next year. Now that they have been restructured, are they able to be more nimble in the market? Are they going to become more aggressive?
I think taking away that huge debt burden makes it a very different business.
It means
they can start investing a lot more in terms of infrastructure. They can be more aggressive. I think they can be faster as well. I mean, Blue Label is they're quite a nimble company. So I think, we'll see some exciting stuff out of them. I mean, the biggest issue that they had was just that massive debt.
Yes.
And now the debt is reduced. I mean, it's significant. I mean, what Ogre lost in that transaction is huge.
Tens of billions. Actually amazing that they were prepared to do that.
How desperate they were to get out of that business.
How many more billions were we going to lose? Yes. So let's talk about that other subject that we always talk about where nothing actually ever really happens. That's digital TV migration. Andrew, you wanted to weigh in on this one.
Yeah, I was reading an article of yours the other day, and our new Minister of Communications, Minister Lodlow, said that they're going to finish it by the end of next year, which is fantastic. But there didn't really seem to be any other details in terms of how they were going to do that.
We've heard this before, haven't we?
Yeah. What's it? I love the deadlines, the sound as they make as they rush past.
Douglas Adams.
Yeah, she's so she said that they'll finish it by the end of next year. But we still don't have any clarity on whether she is going to include encryption or not. We don't know whether the piles and piles of already existing set-top boxes, which are evidently sitting in a post office storage facility somewhere, include encryption or not. Whether they are going to roll out with encryption, because she can do it if she wants. There was a story that she's now got an industry council that is going to advise her, but there's no details on who they are, who nominated them, and when they're going to meet. So I'm interested to know how she knows they're going to finish this project by the end of next year when she hasn't even spoken to this council that's going to advise her on how to do it. So, yeah, I'm, you know, color me unimpressed with kind of predictions that she can finish a project which has now been going on for 11 years without any kind of indication of reaching finality.
No, indeed. And there's certainly been... How long has she been in the role now? It's at least a couple of months.
She's been there since the end of March, so it's not...
Okay, that's long. She should have said more than she said, yeah.
First 30 days is the time that you get in and figure out what you need to do, and another 30 days to start rolling out some action.
Yeah.
You know, and after the Concord decision, which basically vested the power in her to make a decision, you know, that's really what it did. Mm. And she hasn't. You know, there's nothing really happening. So I don't know if the department has got any plans or what they're doing, but I can't see how. It's assumed that they suddenly everything comes together and they get together and they talk and they put out a final policy by the end of this year. I can't see them finishing that project in a year. It's not feasible to do that.
Especially if they make a big change on the encryption side of things.
Yeah, look, I'm assuming they won't. Okay, so let's assume that they don't do that. They decide that they'll go without encryption and they'll just put some kind of they'll have some control mechanism to look after the state subsidized ones. The question is like what about the ones that are already built? Is that what they've got, or do they have to be reworked?
Well, I think
who's going to pay for that?
The ones they've got don't have encryption in, so that would be the easiest thing to do.
Don't they? Or do they? Because there's no information.
No.
Nobody's saying.
The manufacturers weren't supposed to build them with encryption. I believe that some of them may have in fact done that.
Just hedging your bets and build 50-50.
Yes, it actually has encryption. Just switch that little switch at the back.
it's a firmware upgrade.
Yes.
Yeah, so and the other thing is that whenever there's this article and they start talking about this migration, they keep pulling out this thing and saying, we've already started the migration in the Northern Cape. And we've issued set-top boxes, but they just don't mention those boxes are all satellite decoders.
Yes.
They're not terrestrial decoders. They're satellite decoders, and they do include encryption because for satellite you have to include encryption.
And they had to do it by a certain date because of the SKA project. Yeah,
because of the SKA project, you know, and also because of the leakage from Botswana and from Namibia.
Right.
Because they've already finished their migration.
Yeah.
Anyway, I can't see it finishing by the end of next year. And if she does make a decision that they're going to switch off analog, I can see that there may be some issues.
Just call it a 3-year migration project just to get the guys on.
Well, by the time they finish this, no one's going to be watching analog television anyway.
Everybody's going to be using the...
We'd like to say that, but the fact is that there's a massive part of the population that still
is
reliant on that.
Saying it in jest, but you're right. The bulk of South Africans still rely on the SABC, on analog television, to consume television services.
The crazy thing, though, is that if they hadn't made such a big deal about it, the normal market, if they'd made it a very simple process without adding all the kind of fluff to it, the market would have just handled 80%+ of the migration for her.
Yeah.
The new televisions would have had the decoders built into them for, you know, people that were buying new sets. Because it's 10 years. Mm. How many people still have a 10-year-old television?
Very few.
Very few. They've replaced them by now. So in that 10-year or 11-year process of messing around, they could have said all new televisions should have this in it. This decoder, this tuner in it, and the market would have handled it. The government wouldn't have had to spend 5 billion rand to subsidize set-top boxes, because most of the televisions would have already had the tuner built in.
And the network's been ready for years. I mean, Sentech's built this thing. It's actually broadcasting every day.
Sentech has built two networks.
They're running two networks concurrently.
They've built two digital terrestrial networks. They built a DVB.
Oh, yes.
T network,
yeah, and then a T2.
And then they had to upgrade it to T2 after the debacle with deciding on whether we were going to use ISDB or DVB.
Yes.
So they've done it twice. Sentech, to be fair to them, they've done a great job.
Yes.
But, you know, to no avail. It's 11 years later and we still don't have a...
It must be driving them crazy. I mean, they're running this network which no one's watching. They having to maintain this old analog network at no doubt huge expense.
Yeah.
They're running this duplicate digital network, which maybe 100 people in the whole country have access to. It's frustrating. But you're right, Andrew. I think December 2018 is being rather optimistic.
Well, yeah, but it's just a deadline after all.
It'll make the same sound as it goes past.
Pick a date, you know, it doesn't really matter. We're now 2 years past the official ITU deadline. Mm. So, what's another 2 years after that?
Let's do it in 2030.
it's just annoying because there's so many better things that we could do with that bandwidth.
That's spectrum. The problem. That's the real problem.
It's just slowing down the access to new spectrum. And that, to be honest, takes us back to the first point, is like the data for the networks.
Yes.
If there's more spectrum, data becomes cheaper because they can manage their networks better.
So in whose interest is it not to let this thing go live? I think we should start there.
Well, conspiracy theorists would argue that the government doesn't want information in the hands of all of its citizens. But I think that's...
I think that's
going into conspiracy theory territory.
I think the real issues. I mean, when it goes back to this, it's pork barrel stuff.
Mm.
It's all about who can make money out of the process, and when the whole project was put in place, the argument was that they wanted local production, and that was probably the one thing that messed it up, because there's no way that for the volumes that we need in South Africa, that local production can ever really be competitive internationally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what you ended up with was a whole lot of new entrants who were just trying to make money on a government project, using taxpayer money to actually fund the project.
Mm-hmm.
And really, that's what it is. I mean, it's about money. Like, where's the money going? And that's what's taken so long.
And it got very ugly. I mean, I went to some of these industry forums where some of these set-top box manufacturers, prospective set-top box manufacturers, were presenting, and there was animosity and screaming and swearing, and I think there was even violence at one of these events at one point.
I mean, the organization that was going to handle it split down the middle, like two separate things. They both kept the name, so you didn't actually know who was
That's
arguing.
Right.
No, it's a bit of a farce, and I say it just goes back to the protectionism that was kind of put in place in the beginning was a mistake. There was no real reason to do it. They were trying to generate an industry that really wasn't competitive, and the volumes didn't justify it. And I think that's really the point, is that if we were a 200 million market, then maybe it would be okay to do it, but with 50 million people, it's just physically the market isn't big enough to justify setting up an industry, especially with multiple suppliers.
Mm. And what happens once these set-top boxes are built? Do these businesses just disappear again? I suppose the idea was to foster some sort of electronics manufacturing industry around this, but I don't think there was a clearly thought-out strategy of exactly how what else these businesses were going to manufacture post the set-top box.
Well, that's exactly the point. It's like, so after you've produced 5 million boxes, then what? What's the yearly demand going to be? Mm. You're going to sell maybe another 500,000 a year.
Mm.
But you've got 6 or 7 different manufacturers all competing for what effectively is a low-margin, low-price product. Mm. It's just not sustainable.
We need to take a break. We'll be back right after this.
Bidco is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. Bidco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Honey, why can't I download any more series?
Dad, my game just bombed.
Daddy, I was speaking to Kevin and my call just cut out.
With uncapped Vox Fibre to the home, reaching your cap is a thing of the past. You can have all your devices connected all the time. Get unlimited browsing, unlimited calling, and unlimited entertainment. Vox Fibre, now uncapped. T's and C's apply. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Well, welcome back to Talk Central. How's it, Richard? How's it, Andrew?
How's it?
So, Leica Mobile, have you heard of Leica Mobile before?
Leica Mobile? Leica Mobile.
Leica Mobile.
Leica Mobile.
L-Y-C-A Mobile.
The name seems familiar. I've seen that, if I recall.
They are apparently the biggest MVNO in the world. They operate in about 2 dozen markets around the world, predominantly, I think, in Europe, also South America. And they're coming to South Africa. They are going to be launching here imminently on the back of Cell C's network. So yet another MVNO on Cell C. And they haven't announced pricing yet, but what caught my attention was the fact that these guys claim to be the biggest in the world. Certainly MVNOs in South Africa haven't really taken off. Virgin Mobile has kind of potted along and not really gone anywhere in particular. F&B launched, F&B Connect. I'm not sure how successful that's been, but I certainly don't come across a lot of people using F&B Connect.
The only guys who bought iPads and iPhones on their plan got the SIM card, the F&B SIM card.
You got the SIM card?
No, I said only people that bought the iPhone
and
the iPad through them probably have the F&B SIM card.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, but interesting. It's going to be interesting. The MVNO market has gotten a little more competitive in South Africa. Cell C has built a platform to support these companies. And some big brands have gone onto it. Mr. Price, MRP Mobile comes to mind. There's a company started by You and Me Mobile. They're quite small. But there's a platform created by Steve Bailey, who's the former MD of Virgin Mobile in South Africa, and he's launched a whole bunch of these things. I think there's one, there's Boxcell, Afrikaans, Boxcell, Afrikaans cellular network.
Buy dot on Afrikaans.
So really built around communities and brands and that sort of thing, but it certainly doesn't seem to have taken off in the same way as it's taken off in Europe. So Leica Mobile coming in, I don't know if that's going to change it in any way. I mean, they seem to be going to push cheap international calling.
I was just going to say, roaming could be a potential hook for them, you know, especially if you do travel a lot, get some quite local and international calls.
I guess we need I guess we need to see their pricing before we can really get a feel for where they're going and what they're going to, how they might perform in this market. But I really wish we'd see an MVNO launch on another network.
Yeah.
It is a bit of a one-sided affair at the moment.
Mteto Nyati, when he was still MTN CEO, said that they're going to build an MVNO platform or a platform for MVNOs. I don't know what happened to that, whether that disappeared with his exit from MTN. Vodacom seems entirely allergic to the idea. And Telkom certainly doesn't offer any MVNOs that I'm aware of.
But why is that? Because I would imagine if I just think in business terms, having dealers essentially selling your product under various guises, you're still reaching potential audience that you would not maybe reach otherwise. Yes, you might lose some of your own customers to that, but why be that allergic to it when it'll almost certainly bolster your revenue?
I don't know the answer to that question.
There was an ISP, and I'm like frantically searching on Google here, that was talking about doing a data MVNO on Vodacom.
Oh.
And I'm reaching into my memory. It was about 6 or so months ago.
I do vaguely remember a headline, actually.
I just want to look at it. Does the word Crystal Web ring a bell to you?
No. I've heard of them, but it doesn't ring a bell in that context.
I'm fairly sure that they were talking about using Vodacom's network. But it could just be an APN that they've bought, like a business APN, and just reselling it like on a small scale, not as an actual.
I see a couple of headlines here. IT Web saying Crystal Web launches mobile data less than a rand a gigabyte.
So I think probably just an APN. Buying an APN on Vodacom's network and then just reselling data on that. I suppose on a small scale you can do that fairly easily, but not really large scale.
So Dimension Data, they've been in the news for interesting reasons lately. A lot of speculation, a lot of it coming out of Bloomberg, that there's some corporate action going on there. First, the report was that they may be interested in buying Dark Fiber Africa. That seemed to be related to a roadshow that Dark Fiber Africa was doing, and that seemed to fall by the wayside. Then there's been subsequent speculation that NTT is looking to offload Dimension Data Africa. I spoke to the executives at DD, and they strenuously denied it. There's since been speculation that, in fact, the Dimension Data management locally is looking to buy it from NTT and relist it on the stock market. And then now there's also speculation that MTN and Vodacom are potentially involved in a bidding for either Dimension Data Africa or for Internet Solutions. So, you know, there's a lot of smoke and no doubt some fire behind this. Where it's going, I don't know, but it's pointing towards some sort of consolidation in this space. Internet Solutions is obviously a very prized asset and could fetch a lot of money, especially if there's a bidding war between Vodacom and MTN for it. And I suspect that's where a lot of this noise is coming from. Internet Solutions, I think a lot of companies are interested in potentially. The price that was being bandied about for Internet Solutions on one Bloomberg report I saw was 8 billion rand.
Wow.
I was looking at $600 million.
Dollars, yeah. Where this is going, I don't know. It's just speculation, which I suspect means there's been lots of people talking to each other with nothing firm actually happening behind the scenes. Maybe there's some leaking going on by certain companies that are hoping certain things will happen. But interesting to see that the local dimension data business might be in play, especially given that it wasn't all that long ago that the NTT deal happened.
That was a few years ago, 2010.
That was a 24.4 billion rand acquisition at the time. What does it say if NTT is looking to sell its local operation? What does it say about the SA and broader African market that they might be considering a sale? It's all speculation. I must say, as I said when I spoke to Dimension Data about this, they dismissed it out of hand and said it's absolutely not true.
I've always looked at the Dimension Data IS situation as like it just feels big and bloated. I think it can be much leaner. And in fairness, I did work for them for a year or two, so kind of I saw a little bit of the inside, and I do think they can be leaner. I think they can be much better businesses, and I've always looked at them as a bit bloaty, you know, there's just too much happening. There's just too many entities.
You're talking about Dimension Data broadly?
The whole group, yeah, all those companies that are related. It just seems like you can come in there and just... make it a little streamlined, you know, make it a lot more streamlined just to, I don't know, it just seems like there was a lot of fuzz around. That was just my perception.
Sure.
Just looking at the kind of Google results, it all seems to come from Bloomberg.
Yeah.
There doesn't seem to be any kind of, any other article says, yeah. Bloomberg says.
It's all from Bloomberg.
It's all from Bloomberg. Mm. So either they're really, really close to what's happening and they've got a scoop, or they're just making something up.
They like to post things very quickly.
Yeah, but Bloomberg has a reputation for not making things up. So,
yeah.
they're being fed information, or they're doing some proper investigative work. Who knows? But Dimension Data is one that bears watching for sure. Something is going on. Something is going on. Just don't know quite what yet.
I've just looked at five different articles, and every one of them says Bloomberg recently reported that.
There we go.
So Bloomberg's a good source.
There we go. And that takes care of our news this week. Let's move on to our regular features. I thought I'd pick our winner as the Levy brothers, Brett and Mark Levy from Blue Label Telecoms, for pulling off what undoubtedly is a very complex deal, buying Cell C and restructuring the debt of that organization, and getting the guys from the Middle East to... write off all that money as well. Cell C is in a strong position now, certainly a much stronger position than it was. And it's certainly the biggest deal that the Levy brothers have ever done. They're interesting guys. They're born and grew up in Delmas and on the Far East Rand. They've worked their networks well, and they've built a robust, sizable business in Blue Label. They're certainly not scared to take on some challenges and some risks, and that's what they're doing with the Cell C deal. So I thought it'd be worth making them our winner this week. And our loser this week is Phakamile Pongwana, the now former CEO of ICASA, who was suspended just a few weeks ago and has now stepped down in mutual agreement with the council of ICASA. City Press published a story, I think it was not this last weekend, but the weekend before, saying that there was an investigation into sexual misconduct against him. He stepped down before the investigation could run its course, he's our loser this week. Phakamile Pongwana, CEO of ICASA, seems to have kind of thrown his career away a bit there.
Yeah, it is a bit of a poison chalice, ICASA, isn't it? you know, it's just like, when's the last time you heard of somebody like left ICASA and went on to great things?
Bigger and better things.
Very true. Andrew, did you come with a pick this week?
I have a pick which is part of my GuptaBot research.
Okay.
I was pointed towards a local company called Paterva, who make a kind of forensic mapping software called Multigo. And it's really, really quite incredible stuff. I discovered later on that, I don't know if you know of Kali Linux, which is the kind of hackers Linux. This comes kind of pre-installed on it. And it's a fantastic package that allows you to build connections between different entities. So you can do it. You can go and investigate a website, and it'll go and basically pull up all of the connections within that website as to where it's hosted, who the name server is, who owns it, pulls it all up, and it maps it all out very, very carefully. If you go to a big company, you can actually map out the company. It'll start pulling all the people that are in it, what their email addresses are. It's a fantastic forensic tool, and it's just brilliant, but nobody knows about it. So if anybody's got a bit of time and wants to do a little bit of forensic analysis, is go and check out Multigo. I think they're on their fourth iteration now. The community edition is free to download. It's a bit limited in terms of how many kind of things that you can actually map, but it's great to play with. And then they have a whole lot of kind of paid versions, which allow you to dig in a little bit deeper down to kind of 10,000 transforms. And they, because I spoke very nicely about them on Twitter, they gave me a short free license. So I've been playing around quite a lot, trying to like dig into a couple of websites and stuff. It's really good fun.
Cool.
Let's have a look at it. Very cool. Yeah, I'm going to try that out.
Richard, what's your pick?
So I recently played with a little gadget called the A-Data iMemory module. And essentially it's a, I don't have it here, but it's a USB memory stick with a lightning connector on the other side, which obviously allows you to transfer files between iPhone or iPad and your computer. I liked it because you could back up stuff directly to it, so I could back up my entire iPhone to it, or parts of it, or all my photographs, or I can transfer photos and video back. I see a big appeal in people with 16-gigabyte iPhones because, 16-gigabyte with just a basic iOS installation these days basically fills it up. With this, you can plug it in and actually play movies and music directly from this memory module, which is pretty handy, I think.
Cool.
That's the A-Data iMemory flash drive. It's available in 32-gigabyte, 64-gigabyte, and the 128-gigabyte versions.
How much does it cost?
The 32-gigabyte version is about $800, and the 128-gigabyte version is just under 2,000 rand. So, I mean, I like the 32-gigabyte because it's quite affordable, and for people with 16-gigabyte iPhones, I think it's a great accessory to buy because my wife had one that always ran out of space. So with this, you know, if you have, you can either back up or just have files run off there all the time. Pretty cool.
By the way, I don't know if you saw that joke that was doing the rounds on Twitter this week. There was a picture of the new iPhone. There's no space anymore for the home button, so now Apple will sell you an optional home button when you play the phone.
It's a dongle now.
Fantastic. That's a good laugh for that.
Absolutely. On that point, though, just as a side note, Quinter, did you see the news about Apple going to allow you to disable the fingerprint reader on your iPhone?
I saw a headline about it. What's the point?
Well, so that the cops can't force you to unlock your phone with your fingerprint.
Is that the reason?
So for criminals, I think it's a really good update.
But you don't need to register your fingerprint in the first place.
No, you don't need to.
It seems...
But doesn't it for... So you can actually operate your iPhone. I've never had it on.
You can set it up and just use a passcode.
So can you switch it off very quickly with...
Maybe that's a feature they put in now. Maybe it's a two-tap and it disables the fingerprint scanner.
At the airport, let's switch it off.
Yeah.
Great stuff. My pick this week is something called the Great 78 Project. Internet Archive, yes.
Oh, yes. Indeed.
So it's a plan to archive as much in digital format, FLAC format, as much of the old 78 RPM records. Now, this goes way back before any of us were alive, I think, back to the 1950s and earlier. It was a popular way of buying music, 78 RPM records. And now this initiative to archive as much of the material as possible is underway. And, a lot of this music is, it would have disappeared otherwise, I think.
It's a fantastic project. I stumbled onto it, and I've actually, on Twitter, I've actually got the feed from them. So every time they add a new 78, I get a little Twitter notification.
Oh, that's nice.
And it's some of it's horrendous.
I'm sure a lot of
it's like really bad. But some of it's like really interesting stuff. So it's stuff from 1898 you know, yes. up to the 1950s.
Yeah. And from right all over the world, Eastern Europe,
all over.
Asia.
And you can now use it royalty-free, I would assume, right?
Well, yeah, so, I mean, the copyright has ended. It's a 50-year copyright, so, I mean, most of the copyrights...
It's a great resource for video makers, because I'm always looking for new music to add on somewhere.
In fact, I'm looking at original Dixieland One Step here by Rosie McCargue. Memphis 5. Maybe we can make that our new podcast theme tune.
Let's listen to it first.
Let's listen to it, yeah. Let me press play and see if the Wi-Fi works here. It's a bit dodgy today for some reason.
You're going to get some snap, crackle, and pop.
There we go.
That's fantastic.
Reminds me of those old Disney cartoons.
Yeah.
There we go.
Very cool.
So go check that out at, what is the address? I've closed my window.
Great78.archive.org.
There we go. We'll also include that in the show notes. And apart from our quiz results, that's our show for this week. Andrew, do you want to kick it off with the first question?
Right. The first question was, which major PC manufacturer this week reported an unexpectedly poor set of financial results? And that was Lenovo. What was the reason for that?
It was multiple. Their smartphone business is not doing so well. You know, they bought Motorola Mobility. That side of things doesn't appear to be doing that well. But they've also, their PC business has taken a bit of a smack. HP and Dell seem to be quite resurgent at the moment, bringing out quite good computers.
Is anything to do with the memory prices and battery prices? Because a lot of the guys were complaining that memory prices have spiked. And because of electric cars, battery prices have spiked.
No, really. I'm not sure how much of a role that played, but they've lost market share relative to the competition, so it would suggest that it's Lenovo-specific issues.
Their problem, not a general one.
Mm. So the second question, the Akasa CEO this week resigned after being suspended a few weeks ago. Who is he? And that, of course, is Phakamile Pongwana.
The third question, which industry body this week called on mobile operators to open the networks to data resellers? And the answer there is the Internet Service Providers Association.
And the fourth question was, HMD Global this week unveiled the first flagship Nokia Android phone. What is it called? And for a bonus point, what processor powers it? It was, of course, the Nokia 8, and the CPU in that is a Qualcomm Snapdragon 835, which is pretty much the same as in Samsung S8, I think.
Yeah, in the US version of the S8. Yeah. It's a nice-looking phone, I must say. I'm looking forward to getting some time playing with it.
They've gone with a similar concept to Huawei in terms of the camera. They've got a dual camera, so one color, one black and white.
Yes.
Should be quite interesting. Mm, and also one of those stupid ideas that you can take a selfie and a picture at the same time.
Yes. Why? It's got 3 13-megapixel cameras.
It's for people taking video, obviously, who want to include themselves in a video, which is actually a good feature for the
They call it a bothy.
A bothy, no
way. You can take a picture of yourself and somebody else at the same time.
I saw the term bothy in one of the articles and I didn't know what it meant.
Please burn that idea now.
I wish I could
unhear it.
And our last question this week, which company this week announced plans to make the blockchain available from space using satellites? And that's a company called Blockstream.
And I don't understand. Why do you need a satellite to access the blockchain?
Yeah, I don't quite understand it either.
Send your Bitcoins to Mars.
I think the idea is that it will be universally accessible where there's currently
internet
no internet.
Internet isn't required, potentially.
Mm. I'm not sure.
But surely you could just... Any kind of internet connection will give you access to the blockchain. So why would you need
specifically
a satellite?
I suppose the same reason you use a
satellite. I'm sure there's a reason. I don't understand
it. It's when you need to access the blockchain when you're in the middle of the Amazon jungle, you know, as you do.
Yeah, using a satellite phone. Fantastic.
That's our show. As always, if you've got any feedback, we'd love to hear from you. info@techcentral.co.za is our email address. Andrew, thanks for joining us on the show this week.
Oh, thanks very much.
And Rehot, I will see you again next week.
Sure, yeah.
Until next time, cheers.
Ciao, ciao. Cheers.